I'm Bob Boylan here with All Songs Considered. Thanks for everybody in the chat room. I'll bring Sharon on the line in just a second. I just want to let people know how this is going to work. I'm here with Robin Hilton.
Hey, Bob.
So what we have is during the record while it was playing, many people asked questions. We are going to draw on those questions to talk to Sharon about. We'll do this for about a half an hour. Afternoon, Sharon.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. How do you feel listening to this after you've probably had a little distance from it, I would imagine, from the recording time to now it's out and now you're hearing it?
It's a very surreal experience, especially listening here with you guys.
And surreal in that, does it feel like you're the one who did this? Does it feel you were so immersed probably in something like this?
Yeah, it feels, in some ways it feels like it was so long ago, and in some ways it feels like it was a different person then, but it really blows my mind that that's something that I created, yeah.
I can imagine, like, you take on something like this, you do music that is so very personal. It is, for your first few records, it's very stripped down. I bet it was kind of a little scary to do something that would have the potential of this much power and this much production. Did it scare you to do something like this?
It would have if I wasn't working with someone as sensitive as Aaron Dessner.
Uh-huh. Good.
We had long conversations of trying not to overdo it and testing each other's limits as far as how minimal we could make it and how epic we could make it, and kind of helping each other understand those lines.
Any fist fights?
Only one, but it was friendly.
Good. We have a number of questions from listeners over the course of this. I don't know if you were in on the chat room itself that's on the webpage, but they were flying fast and furious, and really good ones, too. You have a lot of people in the chat room who have listened to your music for a long time and have things to ask. Robin Hilton's going to read some of those, ask some of those questions.
Hey, Sharon.
Hi, how are you?
All right, how are you?
Good.
So let's just talk a little bit more about the sound. Lots of questions about the bigger sound. And one person writes that there seems to be a pretty large leap in sound from the last record to this one. Did working with people like Aaron and Jen from Y Oak influence you to have this fuller sound, or was this something you wanted to do originally?
It definitely took on its own shape as we worked more on it, but the main purpose of working with Aaron and inviting other people in on this record was to collaborate and be open to other people's ideas, because I usually dictated the instrumentation on the last two records, which obviously is very minimal, and I wanted to be a little more open-minded this time, and it turned into being a lot more open-minded.
Yeah.
Maybe she should tell us some of the people who are on the record, because we know Aaron, we know Jen from Y Oak.
There is Juliana Barwick and Brian Devendorf and Brian. Matt Barrick. And
Brian Devendorf is a name I don't know, and if I should, I'm sorry.
Oh, he is the drummer of The National.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Brian,
he'll never forgive you.
It's over. It's just over.
Well, good talking with you, Sharon.
Yep.
Well, another listener writes that with arrangements this complex, how do you know when a song is done? You know, is there a moment where it just sounds right, or do you have to tear yourself away from it at some point and just say, I've got to quit?
Well, we were in some ways lucky where we had such a short amount. Like, every time we went to the studio, there were spurts. So we'd have a week or 2 weeks at a time, and then we'd both be touring separately, and we'd have a lot of time to make notes. So we'd come back after having time away from the song and see what it was that we were worried about or concerned about. And basically, when we stopped banging our heads against the wall, and there was really no arguments when songs were done. Because we could go on forever if we let ourselves,
right.
But when we're happy with a song the way it is, like, why push it?
Was there a common language or sorts of, like, things that you would talk about that you felt described what you were after? I mean, these things are hard to put into words. You could, you know, you could say, oh gosh, my voice was too loud here, or that's some of the obvious stuff. But just in general, in terms of trying to, like, put the sound into words to describe what you were after, did certain terms come up now and again, more often than others?
We wanted to keep a rawness, even with the production value.
Huh.
We wanted to keep the vocals pretty up front. We wanted it to be dark. We focused a lot on drones,
mm-hmm.
because that's pretty, that is overlying on the whole record, I think.
And a lot of those drones, are they guitar, or are they, would you even know at some point what they are?
Yeah, some is, like, one is a harmonium.
Right.
Some are violins. Some is a bowed guitar. Some is a bed of guitar verbed out like crazy. But it's just, most songs have a drone in there.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah.
Another listener talks about the song Serpents, which is great cut on the record. She says that Serpents feels like a release of all the unresolved anger and tension of your typically more brooding songs. She loves it. Was this record sort of cathartic for you in any way?
Definitely. I mean, when I write, it's usually because I'm really upset about something. And it's writing is cathartic to me in general, which is why I ended up playing it all. But that song specifically was the first song I let myself be angry without necessarily aiming it at anyone. And it, in some ways, it's more being angry about myself about being angry and trying to talk myself out of it and excusing the person I'm actually angry at.
I was wondering if you had, when you go to approach a new record, these days a lot of people just get on this cycle where they say, okay, I've toured this record for a year, year and a half, now I got to write a new record. Whether for you it's something that was just welling up inside of you, or was it just time to make a record, or, you know, where do you come on those things?
For this record, I was writing a lot, and I brought about 30 songs to Aaron, and I felt like I couldn't slow down. And the opportunity arose, and I knew between both of our schedules how busy we were, and there was actually time to work on songs together. And I had already this collection of songs that really made sense. And I felt like, carpe diem, why wait?
It's such a great feeling when everything's clicking like that.
Yeah, when does that happen?
Exactly. Do you have a favorite, this is a question from another listener, do you have a favorite place to write music? Do you have a room that inspires you, or some outdoor space where it comes to you? Where do you write?
Well, right now, my favorite place to write is in my living room. I finally have a home.
So you were, for a while, living basically in the garage where Aaron's studio was? Is that my understanding?
And on the road a lot.
And on the road.
Touring, yeah.
Yeah, I was touring so much that I was only really home a week a month, and we recorded every day, and I was crashing with friends at night most of the time. So I got a place in October. During that time, I was writing a lot on the road. And I was editing a lot and thinking about instrumentation. So in the van during that time was my favorite time to write, because I could put my headphones on and kind of zen out for a while.
What are you holding? Are you holding an instrument, or are you writing just words? What's going on there?
It's in the van. I was doing MIDI controls. That way I wouldn't annoy my other bandmates.
So you had like a little MIDI keyboard or something you can play, or?
Yeah, I had a little keyboard where I was writing, like, coming up with ideas for bass lines and drum parts without... I'd even see my drummer looking at me in the rear view laughing, like, is that my drum part? Are you writing my drum part right now?
Like, that's great.
It was super funny.
What a world.
Sharon, one of the things that I've immediately noticed on this record the first time I heard it was how bold your voice sounds. And I asked you about it. You said you were actually taking vocal lessons.
Yes, I've been taking vocal lessons, learning how to relax a lot more. I think that'll be my goal this year, is to relax more, because I feel like I threw out my voice last year for a couple of weeks because I was overextending myself and not singing properly. I was lucky I don't have any vocal cord damage, but just learning how to relax the throat and the jaw and the tongue, I learned.
Yeah.
What do you feel? I won't do my exercises now, but.
So you feel like it really made a big difference for you then?
My voice is a lot, it doesn't get strained as much, and it lasts a lot longer now, and I feel like my range has gotten bigger as well.
Another question from a listener says that they have to know what your current influences are. They detect subtle hints of Heartless Bastards and a very small sprinkling of Over the Rhine on these songs. Do you hear any of that?
I actually embarrassingly don't know those bands.
Oh, well, Heartless Bastards, yeah. I'll have to send you some. Well, what
are
your...
Called out on air.
Do you have any current influences that you feel like anything you're listening to that did end up on this record?
Lower Dens, Y Oak, Juliana Barwick. I mean, yeah. Currently, but...
Two Baltimore bands.
Yeah.
Lower Dens and Y Oak. Cool.
Yeah, but those are the current ones. It was a lot of older music for this record that inspired it, I think.
I think a lot of musicians often don't listen to their peers, maybe in the van, you know, as you drive around. But I think I find a lot of songwriters that I talk to stay away from listening to their peers unless, you know, they're traveling and they just can't help it because it's in the car.
I love listening to current music. I feel like I'm a little behind, though. I've had my head in the sand. But I heard that new Cass McCombs record, and it's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll excuse you for having your head in the sand if you keep putting out good records like this.
What about reading? Are you one listener writes, who or what are you reading? Who are your favorite authors? If any of that turns up in your lyrics.
I was reading a lot of Annesenin and Diane Ackerman.
Who was the... Anais.
Anais Nin. My bad.
Yeah, you may be right, actually. I don't know if that's how I've always pronounced it.
Yeah, I want to say that, too. I kind of go back and forth. It's a pretty name.
It is.
But I was reading her diaries and her short stories during that time, and Diane Ackerman's Natural History of Love.
Yeah.
And just trying to be more positive in my writing. I think that affected it.
Yeah. Someone commented about the cover art, that it's different from portraits on your previous recordings. Was there a reason you wanted to go with a photograph rather than another drawing? For people who don't know, you had these wonderful prints on the first couple records.
Oh yeah, my friend Rebecca did those drawings. The choice for the photo on this record was because I felt like, for two reasons, I felt like I'm becoming more of myself in music and being more honest than I have been so far. And I wanted it to be a very bold photo, and I wanted it to not be pretty feminine. And I didn't want it to be soft. I just wanted it to be really strong, androgynous, kind of direct photo, because I feel like the other two album covers were really feminine and almost vague in a way too, because they were pretty and soft, but it doesn't represent this record very well. But I also, it was kind of a slight nod to John Cale's record Fear, which I tried to copy the layout a little bit, because I really, that record was on heavy rotation during that time. Mm.
There's a great, one of the great things about that John Cale record, Fear, is the role the piano plays in this. And you have, I don't think you mentioned Doveman.
Oh, Thomas Bartlett.
Thomas Bartlett. Is he the one playing the piano on your record?
Yeah, he's all over the place. Yeah. He's amazing.
He really
is.
He's
a wizard.
I just saw him play with this fantastic Irish band, the Gloaming, the Gloaming, I think is what they're called. And you wouldn't think his sort of piano playing would fit inside an Irish, sort of traditional Irish band, but it totally worked. He's really a remarkable fellow. And how did you hook up is this something that some of these people are things that Aaron brought to the table, or are there people you brought in because you wanted to work with them?
Yeah, it was a combination of both. We talked about our musician friends that we would like to work with, because you want to work with people that you know and get along with and you respect, because otherwise it makes it for a hard time. But Thomas was one of the first people that Aaron brought in, and it was funny because before Thomas got there, Aaron just said, you know, what we're going to do is we're just going to play him the song once, he's going to think about it, and then we're going to let him loose. And you're just going to see him run around, do a bunch of stuff.
Which song was that? Do you remember?
Well, the first one was... What was that song? I think it was All I Can, actually.
Oh.
And then it was Joke or a Lie. And...
So you're saying that...
We are fine.
Do you think All I Can was near first take for him? That would really...
That'd be impressive.
Yeah. Well, more than impressive. It doesn't seem possible.
Well, he really, like, he went in there and tried all these different kinds of keyboards. Mm-hmm. So on one track, we'd have to pick 10 or something. Like, he had 10 tracks of different kinds of keys. Like a Rhodes through pedals, mm-hmm. straight up piano, an organ super low. So we'd have lots of choices. So he'd basically do 10 tracks for every song and just say, take it or leave it, whatever you want. I don't care. I had fun. He's that kind of guy.
That's great. Do you find when you hear someone start to play around with your music, does it make you go and change some of what's going on in the music? Is there an interaction? Is the song sort of written and now it's a matter of executing and putting together? Or does something happen when other people play that makes you either change the words or the phrasing or the way you sing it?
You know, Thomas did a few things that I definitely focused on not covering up, because mm-hmm. there were some really beautiful, not mistakes on there, but nuances. Like when he uses his delay pedal with the Rhodes and controls.
The Rhodes is a Fender Rhodes electric piano for people who...
Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
It's fine. I don't know. Sometimes people know and sometimes they don't. So
a really beautiful electric piano. And I don't know how to talk about gear.
No, it's good. You're fine. I was the parenthetical voice.
But there's a point in We Are Fine where he does this really cool slide, and we didn't want to lose that, so we worked around it so we didn't bury it.
Is he singing? Is he playing to like a scratch track, a track that's not quite final of yours, and then you go back and put in the final, or what are people playing to?
People are playing over very early versions of the song. So we started with guitar and vocal and minimal arrangement around it, like maybe not even drums mm-hmm. at the time. And every time we add a track, it definitely mm-hmm. helps us go into a certain direction, and sometimes it totally changed direction when the drums were added, and sometimes it changed my how I performed the singing of it, because sometimes a song that I thought was softer ended up being a little more aggressive. Sometimes more songs that I projected really called for kind of a sigh type of singing. Mm. But it really kept changing directions as we added tracks.
So the voice was probably one of the last things to get added in a lot of these tracks. The voice that we hear on the record.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool.
Number of people are asking if Thomas Bartlett or anyone else who worked with you on this record, if they can expect guest appearances on this tour.
And which shows in particular.
Particularly which shows, yes.
I leave an open invitation for whoever played on my record to come to any shows they want to come to, and they are welcome to play. It's funny, I feel like everyone that I worked with on this record is so busy that I may not see them until I'm done touring, but I hope that they perform with me again.
Well, you've got to put a touring band together. Do you know who those people are?
Yes, I have a new band right now, and I have the same bass player, Doug Keith, who's a really great songwriter, and Heather Woods Broderick, who's a multi-instrumentalist and a really amazing songwriter as well, and Zeke Hutchins, who's a really, really incredible drummer that I'm excited because everybody can multitask, so we can run around on stage more and play with the lineup.
Doug Keith, he had a great solo record, just for people who want to listen to. I wanted to mention that, The Lucky Ones, that I really enjoyed. And people are also asking if there's anyone you'd like to work with in the future.
Yeah, lots of people. I would really like to play more with, like, collaborate with Shearwater or Laura Dens and Dream World, PJ Harvey.
You might be able to make that happen.
We'll see. Please, PJ.
Were there any songs that didn't make it onto the record that you think you might end up doing something with? One listener writes, there are a number of songs you perform live, but they think you haven't recorded Heart in the Ground, Tell Me, or some of the covers, Blaze Foley's Oh Love, Foley's Oh Love.
Tell Me was actually a song that we tried recording, but it kept turning into this really cheesy elevator rock song that we couldn't wrap our heads around. But yeah, we recorded about 16 songs, and two of them are B-sides to 7 Inches that will be out this year. And the other ones, I don't really know what I'm going to do with yet. We'll probably play them just to switch it up and try them out. And Hard in the Ground, I haven't played in a really long time. It's a sad one.
How do you, like, this is a geeky question, but how do you sort of store your songs? I mean, are they written on paper? Are they, like, do you just keep them in your head, or you're able to just recall them at any moment and just say, oh, yeah, and just start playing it? How does that work for you? You have 30 songs you walked in the door with. That's a lot.
Well, I'm not saying they were all good.
No. but how do you remember?
11 songs made the record.
Yeah, there you go.
I record really lo-fi tracks on GarageBand and just file them. And I rewrite lyrics all the time, because I hate when lyrics sometimes feel like I can't relate to them anymore, and then it's harder to perform them. So I'll rewrite lyrics out on notebooks, and I have rough tracks on my external hard drive and on my laptop, which I actually need to back up really soon. dork.
Yes. Lyrics that aren't relevant to you anymore, the ones you sort of toss out, are hard for you to do. But I always wonder how it isn't hard to sing something that's incredibly personal, that's maybe aimed at a certain person, or, you know, certainly inspired by a certain person. Don't you find that hard?
The harder part is looking at people while doing it, and the time in between where you're kind of looking at people's reactions, like, is she okay? But I need a big reason why I play music is to just feel something and to understand something. So even if it's personal, hopefully I write in a general enough way where it doesn't alienate the listener. Like, that is a really big concern of mine. But I also feel like there's not enough emotional music, and I know that I don't consider myself emo or anything, but I think it's really important to acknowledge how you're feeling and what you're going through, and that it's human, and that it's okay to be sad, and it's okay to be angry, and it's okay to go back to that place to try to understand it.
I think that really comes through when you play live. I remember the first time seeing you with Bob a couple years ago in Austin, and I don't even know if people have to be able to identify with the specific lyrics if they can see and hear how you're feeling. I think they can make a connection that way. I certainly did when I first saw you live.
He brought tissues in the studio today.
don't
I'm sorry.
Oh, Bob, that video was so amazing that you posted. Sasquatch.
For those who didn't ever see it, you want to describe it?
No. I didn't. I was totally busted.
Sharon's on stage at Sasquatch. I'm about 20 feet from Robin with a camera that had a nice little zoom on it, and he's He's there. Were you hugging Mike? I don't remember.
No, I wasn't hugging. No, I don't hug anybody.
But you were kind of weepy.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful moment.
It made my day.
Oh, that's awesome. It makes my day, too, to see that.
You guys are amazing.
Thank you.
No, you are.
You.
We only have a couple more minutes, so... This is maybe a funny question, but that one of the listeners wrote.
This isn't the one. What your favorite cupcake is?
Right. No. It's pretty obvious to anyone who's been going to your shows over the years that the audiences have been getting bigger and bigger, and you signed to Jag Jaguar, you're getting a lot more attention. And one listener writes, she says that she wonders if your increasing popularity in performing in front of larger crowds has been or required much of an adjustment for you, what that's been like.
I feel like overwhelming is the word I want to use. I do get really emotional when I see that happening, because it's kind of an intense thing to see. In a way, where I'm at right now makes the shows a lot more energetic, because you feed off the energy of a crowd. But I never want to play to a place that's too big where I feel like I'm not connecting with anyone. I think that's when I'll know I can't play anymore.
Yeah. Has there been a space where you left feeling like you didn't make as much of a connection?
Yeah, I mean, they got to be clunker shows.
Or just because of the space, the size of the space, or you can't see the... And does that affect your playing then?
Yeah, because connecting is what it's all about, you know? I won't call out certain venues, but I've definitely had some very impersonal shows where I wondered if, you know, anyone heard or felt anything. But, you know, you do your best.
Well, and you do. So we'll look forward to seeing you this year. Your tour starts?
February 10th is the first day in Philadelphia, and we're out for a long time.
Oh, one quick question. A number of listeners wrote, and I forgot, is why the album title? Why Tramp?
Well, Tramp has many meanings. First off, it's kind of a joke on some level, because I'm a total joker, and... Charlie Chaplin is the original tramp. Mm-hmm. But tramp is the original definition is to be homeless, which I was during most of the writing and recording of this record and traveling around a lot. But also I wanted it to be a really strong and bold word. You know, just like the photograph, I wanted something very to the point. And there's also that double standard of the word tramp. When you call a man a tramp, it's kind of endearing, but when it's about a woman, for some reason it seems derogatory. Mm-hmm. So I kind of just wanted to own that word a little bit and make a joke that, you know, these songs are about lovers, you know, and friends, lovers. Just, it's a pun.
Well, it is such a wonderful record, and I'm have enjoyed listening to it, and will continue to enjoy listening to it this year as one of my favorites this year. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us and to answer all the questions from listeners. You've got great fans, and we've got a great audience.
Thank you so much for having me. It means a lot to me.
Record Tramp comes out the 7th. You can hear the whole thing online if you haven't already done so. A real pleasure, and thanks for all those in the chat room too. Good little crowd. We always get great questions from our crowd. Love them.
Thanks, Sharon.
Thank you, guys.
Be well.
Take care.
You too.
Bye, everybody. We'll put this on the podcast and enjoy it. Spread the word. Sharon Van Etten's new record comes out next week. It's online now to hear. I'm Bob Boylan for NPR Music, along with Robin Hilton.
Thanks, Bob.
It's All Songs Considered.